eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease and a whole lot of love, you transform 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. LED headlights, spoilers, whatever you need. eBay Motors has it at affordable prices. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride every time. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May of 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast.
On the left.
From your glaze.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Now, guys, it's so nice to be, because the last month and a half, let's just say we're the opposite of relaxed, right?
What do you mean, man? Yeah. I'm on so much acid still.
No, I know. And you are technically right now, if you could see, Kissel is perched on top of the chair like a gargoyle and he is completely shaved.
Ooh, I just saw that scene in Ghostbusters yesterday.
Yeah.
Woo.
But guys, let's talk about this, right? Because this is a relaxed fit.
Yeah.
What relaxes us? I feel like it's important for the audience to know. Kissel, what do you do when you kick back and want to let your hair down?
I watch Gordon Ramsay on cocaine.
I wish it was him on cocaine. It's him versus cocaine in his own restaurant. It's a travesty.
If you take cocaine away from the waiters of America, this entire fucking industry will collapse.
It's going to collapse.
It's ridiculous. Steak videos, Salisbury steak videos, or dogs playing with other dogs,
now,
perhaps.
But Marcus, dog meat,
yeah.
What do you do when you want to sit back and you just want to fucking, you want to kick up your heels and you want to chillax?
Elden Ring, motherfucker.
Is that
I don't know,
you?
Buddy. I think you're grain from that game.
Fuck no, man. Yeah, no, it's the most relaxing possible thing that I can do because I'm going off of nicotine right now. And I usually have to like constantly chew gum or like, you know, just fucking jam on a toothpick for hours at a time.
Cool.
But when I play Elden Ring, I don't need anything at all because my focus is right there, man. I'm fucking cake. I took Radahn down with a straight melee build. I fucking did it, man.
Okay.
Bleed effect on my sword.
Again, not exactly relaxed.
We got video games. We got dog videos. We got food. What about you, Henry?
I'm so glad you asked. One of my favorite activities recently that really helps me just chill out is I love just giving random one-star reviews to anything on the internet.
Oh.
Products, shows. I just go out there. I don't know anything about it. I just go in there.
Hit a one-star.
I have many different accounts. I give a one-star. I say stuff like, this man has my family captive. Like, I say stuff like that. Just to kind of see where it goes. Just something hot, you know, just something to release.
All right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And my blowjob machine.
All right. Well, welcome to the last podcast on the left, everyone. I am Ben, hanging out with Marcus and the recently relieved Henry Zebrowski. I didn't realize that you got a full machine to fake give you fellatio.
They don't need to make these things look like women's heads.
No, they
don't.
You know
that? Because I feel like that's superfluous. I'm here for the suction, and that's it. All right. Yeah. I have a wife.
All right.
Yeah. Back when I used a fleshlight still, I preferred the one that didn't look like anything at all.
I don't
was just
need
a tube
lips.
To come in. That's all I need.
Yes.
Or needed.
It's been
many years since I retired the fleshlight, but you know, just saying back then.
Yeah. We all remember your fuck thermos. Really fantastic.
It kept it cum warm.
Ooh, so that's good for hours. Anyway, total non sequitur to today's episode. This is going to be so fun. Fuck MK Ultra. I mean, you know, think about it. It's all real and everything like that. Have fun with that. But today, we are moving on to something a little bit more out of this world.
Mysterioso.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about the UFO sighting by the hand or by the eyes of Frederick Valentich?
He's close. Guys, we are really, honestly, we're right back to incredibly mysterious information. Like, this is shit that, like, truly, the deeper I got into this, this story, and as I was reading about it, like, at first it seemed kind of like a quick in and out, right? Mm. It's this mysterious disappearance of Frederick Valentich, who is an amateur pilot. And it seemed, you know, but the deeper I got
like
into
like those terms. Amateur pilot sounds scary.
And we will cover, he was very amateur.
Okay.
He dabbled. He did too much dabbling, and he should have done a little bit more concentrating on being a pilot.
Okay.
But it's really very mysterious, and the circumstances are really strange, and the stuff that comes out of this story is very compelling.
Awesome. Mm.
The mysterious disappearance of Australian pilot Frederick Valentich is among the most well-known of UFO encounters in the aviation realm. But while it's not as groundbreaking as, say, the Kenneth Arnold encounter, one of the very first aviation UFO flaps, it is certainly more compelling than the skeptics make it out to be.
The Kenneth Arnold encounter, for those of you who don't remember, that's where the term flying saucers came from. It's the first time he saw a thing. It was back in the day, and he saw a bunch of saucers wobbling, and that's what he called them. He said that they look like saucers upon the water.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I'm aware I didn't use the word flap necessarily correctly. I just you like did. To take any opportunity to say the word flap.
No, absolutely. Why not? No, you were correct. You were correct.
Yes. Yeah.
Anytime you drop in a flap in these stories, you're allowed to. A flap is normally a series of sightings, but it's also the side of a ufologist.
Right. So he coined the term flying saucers. And isn't that interesting? We discuss how people try to rationalize what they're seeing. And he's like, oh, that looks like a little saucer cup. Yes. And that's why the term exists. Isn't that something?
Thank you.
Isn't
yes,
it is.
Fascinating.
Basically, in 1978, Frederick Valentich was flying a single-engine Cessna in southeastern Australia, and after calling in an encounter with a UFO, he and his plane disappeared while he was on the radio with air traffic control. Now, the area in which Valentich disappeared was known for decades as a danger zone, the Bermuda Triangle of Australia. But while the tragedies mostly involved naval vessels, Australia's Bass Strait Triangle was known as a place where ships simply disappeared.
Wow. It's fucked up. It's very scary. Because it's
like
right
it.
Outside of Tasmania, which is supposedly a UFO hotspot of the world. Mm-hmm. And it's an incredibly deep body of water.
Okay.
Yeah. And also, as we know, like the UFOs and aliens have been seen by the Aboriginal people of Australia for centuries, if not millennia.
Yeah. Much like the Dogon people. And I had to look that up. And we stopped the podcast so that I could look that up so I could know for certain.
Research. That's good, though. Making sure you're getting it right.
Yeah. At first, I thought it was dugong, but then I realized that a dugong is just a cousin of the manatee. But I was close.
Honestly, I can't believe you knew that.
That's amazing.
But yes, it's another group of people that have an incredibly close relationship to their sky brothers.
I don't know nothing about the manatee. And he's like knowing about their relationships, their cousins, their grandparents. My goodness.
That's that manatee's wife.
I have no clue, dude.
Well, between 1858 and 1979, six ships vanished in the Bass Strait Triangle, including a British warship with the strangely sexy name of the HMS Sappho that disappeared with 100 souls on board.
Good Lord. I guess if you get enough guys with their dicks tucked back, eventually it becomes a lesbian sex party.
Yes, you know. You know
is that appropriate? Is that appropriate?
You know that's the British ship. You can see they've actually carved a vagina right into the top there.
That's nice.
Isn't that? That's fun. Speaking of flaps.
Well, that said, wreckage has occasionally been found from ships that have been missing for as long as 100 years. So disappearance in the Bass Strait Triangle doesn't necessarily mean loss to another dimension. Mm. Much like people believe, like say like Flight 19 in the Bermuda Triangle, many people believe that they flew straight into a parallel dimension somehow.
Or the Malaysian plane. Remember the Malaysian plane
they're
that
still
went missing? CNN's been looking for that for 5 years.
Where's the goddamn plane?
Oh, my Lord.
I'll be screaming that a lot in this episode, too, because we don't know where this damn plane is. And then what's weird is that the fucking, what's his putz? It's like the currents. There's something about the current that also makes it very difficult to find wreckage, where it gets all mishmashied and then sent out to lunch.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's official.
Even so, though, these disappearances certainly add an extra spooky dimension to the story of Frederick Valentich. Now, not much has been made public about the early life of Fred Valentich, but there are really only two personality characteristics that matter to our story. First, both Fred and his father were ardent and lifelong enthusiasts of UFO lore, which was, admittedly, in a more larval stage in 1978 than it is now.
He had a healthy interest in UFOs, and he talked about it a lot with his family, which seems to, it does seem to come up quite a bit. It sounds like maybe he might have had an experience as a little boy.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Perhaps this is where the Australians came up with the wonderful boomerang idea. Perhaps technology from the alien gods.
That's actually, you just stepped into ethno-racism. You just stepped
what?
Into a deep
wait, what is, wait a second.
Problem
you
did. Inside of anthropology,
oh,
mister.
Oh my lord.
You did. You
I didn't
did.
Mean you to.
You stepped straight into the ancient aliens pile of fucking horse dung, my friend.
I didn't know everything was a fucking problem.
Welcome to the op world.
Okay.
Well, in addition to being fascinated with UFOs, Frederick was also a lifelong aviation enthusiast whose only dream was to one day fly airplanes professionally.
I want to fly airplanes! That's aww. What he said every day of his life. I want to fly airplanes!
Be careful what you wish for.
And with this, you have a bit of a chicken and the egg situation going. Either Fred Valentich believed in UFOs because he was fascinated with every constructed object in the sky, no matter what, or he may have wanted to fly so he could get closer to the UFO world and maybe see something for himself. The former is more likely, but you never know.
Well, his dream is that he wanted to fly in the Australian version of the Air Force. Like, he really wanted to be a soldier, and he wanted to fly up there, and he wanted to shoot all the Nazis. Which is, like, it's far from then, because it's 1978.
Right.
So I don't know why he thought now was the time. I'm joining World War II, even though it's, like, you know, 30 years over.
Were the Australians involved in Vietnam at all?
They yeah. watched it.
Okay.
But either way, Fred Valentich's dreams of becoming a well-respected pilot were unfortunately not in the cards, because despite his lofty ambitions, evidence shows that Fred just wasn't very good at piloting aircraft.
Aww.
I didn't know you could fail all of these tests so much and right. so often and still be allowed to rent a plane and fly yeah. it in the sky. I of course, it's a relaxed fit. So it's like, oh, this will be interesting.
Right.
I listened to the Coast to Coast episode. There's a couple of, there's an old In Search Of by Leonard Nimoy and his mustache phase.
He's, nice.
He looks very dashing in it. And I was like, oh, that'll be it. And then, of course, what do I find? A 315-page PDF of the collection, essentially the Australian version of a FOIA request into this case. And what it reveals is how often he failed these tests and how often he sort of, I love Fred. I'm not blaming Fred. We might need to blame Fred, but he said to people, it's sort of like a white lie
uh-huh.
about how he did pass all of these tests.
But he didn't.
No. Huh. And people kept asking his mentor, like his pilot mentor, who might have been half bird. He asked him, like, how'd those tests go? And Fred's like, great. Oh, they went great. I got an A. You know what I mean? Like, and like you got an A, F. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Like, you got on the F in it.
Well, in his late teens, Fred was rejected from the Royal Australian Air Force because he didn't meet the qualifications. So he went into the RAAF Training Corps and had logged 150 hours of flight time by the time of his disappearance. Problem was, during those 150 hours, he'd actually been involved in a disturbing amount of potentially disastrous incidents.
Yeah,
one time,
he's a bit of a Mr. Magoo.
All right, well, maybe he shouldn't be flying a plane.
No. One time, he strayed into a controlled zone in Sydney, meaning he very well could have crashed into a passenger jet.
That's just fantastic. I always love feeling the comfort.
I like to be, hey, my name's Fred, and I'm an accidental terrorist.
Remember when that dude in New York drove his plane into the tower, the former baseball player, and it's like,
yeah,
buddy, you don't want to do that.
Yeah, it was right after 9/11,
right? It was really bad timing.
Yeah. Two other times, he was cited for intentionally flying into a cloud, which, again, could have crashed him into another plane, because the type of single-engine planes he was allowed to fly, they didn't have onboard radar.
What is he, a Doberman? He's just like, there's a cloud. And then he just goes for it? What is happening?
He's sky curious.
I understand the idea of like seeing a cloud and be like, I want to go through that cloud. But then like, I'm a child and he's a pilot. So he really needs to like not do what he wants to do as a child.
I'll tell you what, the only difference between a child and a pilot is a hat and a plane. As long as you can get in there, you're a pilot. As soon as, when you're in the chair, it's like you're now a pilot officially.
That's true.
Yeah. Not surprisingly, these offenses, particularly the cloud attacks, they were actually serious enough where Fred was considered for prosecution.
Cloud attacks. I gotta get these clouds.
What are you in for? Well, you see those goddamn clouds up there? Yeah, I try to fuck with them.
Yeah, yeah, guess what? Yeah, me too. Because them clouds are the ones making me gay.
Aw. Isn't that nice?
But every time, they let him off with a warning. And even with these black marks on his record, Fred was granted a private pilot's license in May of 1978, just 5 months before he disappeared. At the same time, Valentich was still trying to take another route to a pilot career. But when he tried being a commercial airline pilot, he failed all five of the subject exams. And not only that, he failed all five of them twice in the same month.
Just hey, man. Hey, stop. I'm a professional improver. And I have failed any sort of class I've ever taken. I didn't take improv class, okay? So maybe this is all about how, it's about being DIY. It's about putting together a pilot's career for your fucking self. Fuck what all these commercial airline people say about how you're not fit to fly and we can't give you a 727. Kinda. When it comes down to it, man, go fucking take one.
I kind of want you to know how to fly.
Pull yourself up by your own pilot bootstraps.
I don't think that's right.
And put yourself in the sky.
But sometimes you just can't keep a dream down, no matter how many flashing red lights are telling you that this is not what you were meant to do. Yeah. And on October 21st, 1978, Fred Valentich took off for the last time.
My father's birthday.
Oh, nice.
Ah. Now, the flight plan took him 250 miles from Victoria to King Island, but no one is really sure why he took this flight. He told some people he was going to go pick up some very brave friends, while others thought that he was going to go to King Island to buy crayfish. Later investigation, however, found that both of these statements were untrue. Or rather, no evidence was found that either were true, which is an important distinction.
Oh, yes. I thought the crayfish were going to be his friends.
Well, I also did some heavy research into what the Australians call crayfish, because here in America, we call them crawdads, and they're tiny little sea bugs, right?
Not
you
a
eat
fan,
them
but that's
the
whole, okay.
I absolutely love them.
I know.
You got to suck the head.
Despise them. They're disgusting things.
I've never understood the fascination with them, but that's okay.
Never got it. They're gross.
In Australia, because there's also the sausages in there and the corn cobs.
Well,
and the potatoes,
you are just talking
also,
about something that's much different.
Very delicious. Yeah. Now, crayfish in Australia, them's lobsters, friend.
Oh, those are lobsters?
Mm. Yeah, fuckers.
Oh, okay. Mm.
And so they fucking switch it up on us again. What was he really looking for? But there is some evidence in here that I will talk about that I do find interesting. I think there's a bit of a human element, and there is some shit here that we'll unpack as we go.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, while his motivation for going to King Island, while it may seem trivial, it does play into later possible explanations for what happened. Concerning Fred's conveyance on the day of his disappearance, he was flying a 182L Cessna that he'd rented from the Southern Air Service. To give a size of scale, this Cessna was a light, four-seat, single-engine plane. In other words, it was tiny. And from what I can tell from playing Microsoft Flight Simulator, these planes are somewhat easy to lose control of. Although I might just be really fucking bad at that game.
Yeah, I love that game too. And I tell you what, if the U.S. government had any tap into my data of what I was like when I played the Microsoft Flight Simulator, I would be put on a no-fly list. I always flew it into buildings, even as a little boy. I love stuff up on the ground and attacking people and never thought about flying safely, even once.
But that's the video game. You're allowed to be creative like that. That doesn't mean you're grown. Doesn't mean you're going to be grown up to be a domestic terrorist or anything like that.
Nah, man. Nah, man. Because I ain't no Bud Light.
No, you're not.
I'm somebody else. But no, this is, it's like the size of a Toyota, right? I don't know. If you're a pilot, let us know.
Sounds scary.
It's small. Now, other pilots who were at the airport just before Valentich took off, they said that he seemed a bit nervous. But they assumed that this was because most new pilots get nervous before a flight. However, according to Fred's father, Guido Valentich, Fred was becoming increasingly worried that UFOs might attack him while he was in the sky, which does lend credence towards the skeptical opinion that Fred just thought he saw a UFO and crashed the plane because he was distracted by a delusion.
I am beginning to think, though, that he had been seeing UFOs and that he had had, because he did see this thing before and he did weirdly become obsessed with it. But Guido also kind of fed this too, because Guido was super into it and his name's Guido.
Yeah.
And so that also makes him kind of sus. And he's there, like, I mean, he's in Australia. But they were both obsessed with this and they kind of fed off of each other. And I think the reason why he was nervous was because it was a night flight and he had some experience. Technically, he was approved for a night flight, but this was probably only his second or third night flight to go up. So he was very, like, he hadn't had a lot of practice.
He just got his instrument rating for night flights, like, a couple of weeks before. He had not done a lot.
So far, we really haven't set up any sort of mysterious case. Now it just really just seems a bad pilot ended up in Ariel's garden. But I will say, you're going to see, it does get mysterious.
Yeah, it does.
Live from your grave.
A roast as dark as the night, perfect for fueling the cryptid research and mad ravings required for your podcasting. Don't mind the red eyes. He's just trying to warn you of the bridge.
The bridge.
Finally, from the caffeine-addled brains of Springheel Jack Coffee and Last Podcast on the Left, we bring you Mothman's Red Eye Blend. Yes, delicious Panama beans. Go to lastpodcastmerch.com to order yours today.
The only acceptable reason to interrupt a podcast? Your dog. That was your dog saying thank you for BarkBox. You can take a minute now. You pet your dog. But you're going to learn about Bark. To the company dedicated to making dogs happy. Yay! Every month, BarkBox designs and delivers a whole new collection of toys and treats just for your best bud. No, Wendy, I can't get you a whip. You're too cute for weapons. Every treat is made with yummy, healthy, all-natural ingredients like pumpkin and sweet potato. Mmm, tubers! My dogs love their toys selectively. But BarkBox sends good little ones for their little tiny mouths. They have little mouths, but strong, big spirits. So they fight over the little toys. I imagine they think that they are hunting and going after little bugs and rats. And, oh, they love their life and they love them. They love what BarkBox brings. Because BarkBox brings the bark and puts it in a box. Yep. To get your free upgrade, go to BarkBox.com/LEFT.
My sister is the best gift giver I've ever met of any person. It's Jackie Zabrowski. She shops all year thinking about her family and friends and puts little things aside for their birthdays and Christmases. I have no idea how she does it. I don't know how she do it. But guess what? She always wins Mother's Day, but not this year. I'm coming back. Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? I'm taking the crown. All right, give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. I mean this. We have the Aura frame up in my home. We absolutely love it. I can put photos on it very, very easily through the app. It's fun to do. And the memories keep cycling and I get emotional. And we filled it with pictures of Carmi and Wendy. And that is not sad. That is celebratory. So you should try it. It's honestly a really good product. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code LEFT at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
Every day, I fight to set my child up for success, which is why, as I sit and read Carmi and Wendy Dune, trying to explain to them the concepts of the savior complex not working, doubling back on itself, the concept of what does it mean to be a living God? What are those limitations? What are those expectations? And honestly, I know they just want chicken. But there are kids out there that need this type of direct help. And IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids covering math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed to help them understand and master topics in a fun way. Not unlike me, reading children.
Dune Messiah, getting to about 365, seeing where they're at, see if they understand anything. There's no more grading these worksheets. IXL grades everything itself. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. You can't even believe it! You don't want to make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Last Podcast on the Left listeners could get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/left. Visit IXL.com/left to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
So Valentich's plan was supposed to stop in Cape Otway before continuing to King Island. And at 7 p.m., Fred contacted air traffic control in Melbourne and told them that he had Cape Otway in sight, flying at 4,500 feet. But just 6 minutes later, Valentich contacted air traffic control again and asked if there was any known aircraft flying below 5,000 feet because an unidentified craft seemed to be following him.
Uh-oh.
And this is where it really gets mysterious. Now, the actual recording of this air traffic control call is out there on the internet, but it is very difficult audio to listen to, so we can't really feature it on the show. Like, we won't be able to hear it. I had to actually, like, put my head up against the laptop, which I'm certain is helping my brain, to really absorb what it was they were saying. But it does start to get really wiggity here, because he says, like, okay, there's something behind me, because there is military space here, and he asks to check, are there any military operations going on right now? Are there any military airplanes in sight? And they're like, no. And he's like, because I got this thing right behind me that's, like, real big.
That is some scary stuff.
The air traffic controller responded that nothing could be seen on his radar, so he had Valentich describe what he was seeing. From what Fred said, the craft had 4 bright lights that looked like landing lights, and it was approaching from due east while seemingly playing a game, flying at over 2 to 3 times Fred's speed.
He straight up said, I think it's playing a game with me. Here's a little tiny reading of what he described as he was flying.
Okay.
It's flying past. It's a long shape. Open microphone for 3 seconds. I cannot identify more than open microphone for 3 seconds. Before me right now, Melbourne. It's right before me. Melbourne, it seems like it's stationary. What it's doing right now is orbiting, and the thing is just orbiting on top of me. Also, it's got a green light and sort of metallic. It's all shiny on the outside.
Whoa, that's freaking crazy, dude. Even if he was a good pilot, he'd be freaking the hell out. So,
I mean,
it makes sense. That he's
scared. We'll get into the full, like, skeptics explanation later, but there is speculation that he freaked out because he wasn't a good pilot.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And there's also speculation that he was flying upside down and he was looking at his reflection in the ocean. That is actually an explanation. But they also said his plane would not be able to last longer than 3 seconds. That type of Cessna would sputter out. It would literally shut down if.
Okay. Yeah, it's got a gravity fuel system. So if it went upside down, you're dead if you fly that plane upside down. But that's the thing, is that his description of the aircraft it's why ufology is so much fun these days. And it's one of the reasons why Fred's story can't be wholeheartedly dismissed as a simple fuck up. Fred said that the aircraft was oblong, it had a green light, it was sort of metallic and shiny on the outside, and that sounds a hell of a lot like the craft that's been described by pilots for decades. And those pilots' claims were finally confirmed by hard video evidence of UFOs that have been released over the last few years. It all matches up. That's what makes disclosure so fucking insane, that it all matches up with shit these people have been reporting for fucking decades, since the 50s.
Foo Fighters, I know what man. I saw!
Foo Fighters,
I know what I saw!
Just after Valentich described his UFO, it vanished. And to Fred's credit, he did not immediately start screaming that he'd just seen a UFO. Instead, he first assumed that he'd seen a military craft, because he had asked, as soon as it disappeared, he asked, are there any military craft in this area? Is there any project planned in this area right now? And just when air traffic control told him that no such craft was present, nor were any exercises being done in the area, Valentich said over the radio that his UFO had just come back into sight and was approaching him from the southwest. At that same time, Valentich also reported that his plane was, quote-unquote, rough idling, which means that it was sputtering out.
Yeah, that's on me at minute 5 of having sex.
Yeah, rough sputtering.
Rough idling.
Yeah.
The last report about the UFO that Valentich gave was that the craft was hovering above him, and his last words just before the radio went silent were, "It is not an aircraft."
Yeah, I'll read it. Can I read it from the actual description?
Read it, go ahead. This is the
aircraft thing. It's not an aircraft, no. So
they're like, "The engine is rough idling. I've got it set at 23, 24, and the thing is coughing. It's coughing. Roger, what are your intentions?" "My intentions are, to go to King Island, Melbourne. That strange aircraft is hovering on top of me again." Open microphone for 2 seconds. "It is hovering, and it's not an aircraft." Cuts out. And then this noise can be heard on the actual recording. You hear this noise. It sounds like...
It's a metallic screeching is how it's described. And it goes on for 17 seconds.
I'm going to black out.
17 seconds is how long it goes on for. And then it just disconnects. Now, it was assumed immediately that Fred Valentich had simply become discombobulated during a night flight. He began flying upside down, which is apparently possible in single-engine planes flying at night, and he fell into a death spiral.
Because it's completely pitch black out there. It's completely pitch black out there. You are, it's very, very easy to get disoriented in the 3D space of flying an airplane.
Absolutely. Yeah.
3 days later, however, once the transcript was released, Fred's father, Guido, made a public statement saying that he hoped his son was abducted by aliens because the alternative was death, which ain't the worst assumption based on Fred's flight record.
"And I got to tell you, I didn't make this puppet and have an angel turn him into a boy for him to get abducted by the aliens."
It's one of the stranger Australian accents, but it checks out, Guido.
"My brother, Geppetto, he makes a little boy who cannot lie, and then that's why his nose is 7 feet long when they ask him, 'Did a Geppetto touch you on the downstairs, Pinocchio? Did he touch you?'"
Well, all right. A deleted scene, perhaps. Although Pinocchio was abused. He was abused.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Why do you say Pinocchio was abused? Who is Pinocchio abused
by? Boy Island. You don't think those
Boy Island? Well, the Boy Island is something different altogether. Yeah, he did get turned into a donkey. But is that abuse or is that just fun? Is that just good, clean fun?
But you want to be a donkey.
I mean,
I would like to be a donkey. I wouldn't mind being a donkey.
I think the role is already filled. He was abused, man. He didn't ask to be born or anything. And then he's made of wood.
Birth is abuse.
Yeah. In a way. And then he's like, every time you lie, your nose gets longer. And it's like, well, how is he going to survive in America?
I don't know.
Well, as it turned out, Fred hadn't just told his father about his UFO fascination. Apparently, Fred had also told his girlfriend that if a UFO did come to Earth, he'd go with it. But he added a romantic caveat that he wouldn't leave without her.
And that's how you know he's truly a ufologist, because I have to have the same conversation with Natalie, because she said that once it came up, and I had to do the thing where I was like, yeah, if they come, I'm going to go right into the spaceship. And then I was like, but I'd never leave without you, baby. Like, I had to make sure, I had to think about it, because you have to add that tag. Always been like, but with you, baby, there's no way that you're secondary.
What if she doesn't want to go?
She's going to have to go.
Okay, fantastic.
Because half my butt belongs to her, and if the aliens want to probe me, they're going to have to ask her permission.
All right.
Yeah. And even so, this girlfriend didn't believe in the UFO story at all and became firmly convinced that Valentich probably turned back to land after his engine trouble began, because that's what he told her he'd do in a situation just like this. However, land searches turned up not a shred of evidence for this theory either, and multiple searches of the sea turned up not even an oil slick.
And this within that FOIA request. Like, if you look at these documents, like, they did an incredibly thorough search for him, and they could not find any sort of, like, because that's what you kind of look for. The telltale signs are puddles of fucking fuel. Like, you're looking, maybe the fuel can tell you where the thing is. It was all dissipated. They found nothing.
Yeah.
All
right. However, 5 years later, an engine cowl flap was found off the coast of Finder's Island, which was indeed a part of a Cessna 182L with registration numbers that were within the boundaries of Fred's plane. And this, to skeptics, is definitive proof of the crash theory.
So now we're here. This is called what we call the full diaper part of this story, because we got the skeptics in there, and they're like,
nobody likes me.
Kind of taking it out on people there.
I'm just sitting in my pee, because like everybody
mocking the skeptical mind, perhaps.
Yeah, if you use summons or fucking ashes, you're not a real fucking From Software player.
Fender Island, of course, one of the louder islands. Given the electric guitars,
the guitars.
Wow. Yes.
I wouldn't want to be neighbors to Fender Island.
Oh wow!
They're
wow.
All it's
right near
the
Gibson Peninsula.
Yes. Oh yes. My God!
Yes,
near the Ibanez archipelago.
I'm just so happy to be here for this.
Yeah, I know.
I am. I'm just. Yeah. We are breaking new ground here.
Yes, indeed.
Now, the skeptic's view of what happened to Fred Valentich was put forth by a United States Air Force pilot named James Magaha. And right there by his side was a professional wet blanket named Joe Nickel, who basically makes a living pissing on paranormal parades.
Yeah.
Bigfoot's just a homeless guy, and you're dumb.
Whoa.
And there's no one who loves me.
Don't yell at me. I'm a Magaha from a long line of Magahas. Magaha, of course, is my birth name. My uncle, he said he's a Uncle Magaha. My grandfather, when he made my father, he said, Magaha! Grandmother, and that's how we got the name. Why do you ask?
I really had a Magaha moment the first time I had black pudding. That's really funny because it's about a Scottish aha moment.
Oh, I get it. Very intriguing.
A Magaha moment.
Everyone always knows the best jokes have to be explained.
That's how you know it's comedy.
Yeah.
Well, Magaha and Nickel said that the four lights seen by Fred at the start of the sighting were actually the planets Venus, Mars, and Mercury, along with a bright star named Antares. And apparently conditions on that night were perfect to see these lights in such a way that might appear to be a landing strip.
I think that's dumb.
I mean, it's
stars ain't a landing strip. Like, we know, right? We know that. Right.
I mean, it does seem a little strange. He's describing an aircraft, or like it could be the stars, but those are pretty different things.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Well, they also think that the green light seen by Valentich was probably just a reflection of one of his instrument lights in the windows of his airplane, which is why it seemed to hover next to him. In other words, according to the skeptics, Fred panicked about UFOs when he should have been focused on keeping his plane in the air.
Yes, but I would posit, what if, like, because now we know. Things like this are harassing some of our pilots. It is now, we are seeing these reports every other day. They are seeing real, all types of craft, black triangles, cylinders, orbs. They're seeing this shit all the time. And now, like, you know, a lot of these, especially if you're in a big, like, corporate airliner, we know that you, the human part comes when you land and when you take off. The rest of the time, you're kind of in an autopilot scenario. So you have a lot of time to observe. And what if fucking Valentich, like, my postulate is that he fucking freaked out when he saw one of these things and was like, oh, and then crashed into the Bass Strait.
An unwilling kamikaze pilot.
Well, other explanations speculate that Fred Valentich might have staged his own disappearance because Melbourne police received reports of a light aircraft making a mysterious landing not far from Cape Otway right after Valentich was supposed to have disappeared. There's also speculation that Valentich might have used the UFO story as a cover for suicide. But this is also unlikely, because from what I know about suicide, people rarely, if ever, go into the day of their death thinking that they're just going to have fun with it.
Right. I mean, that's how I plan to. But Fred Valentich also, there were plans set in place. He was supposed to get there. So one thing, he was supposed to get these crawfish, right? Crayfish, whatever.
Yeah, I just feel bad for everyone who was expecting this great lobster feast.
Sure,
and then all
absolutely.
Of a sudden, it's like, what happened to the guy who's going to get the lobster? Aliens. The aliens abducted and be like, are you fucking kidding me?
Seriously?
You're going to tell me once, this happens once every 10 years and it's on Lobster Sunday.
Yes. That is a seafood crime.
That is a crime.
If you're supposed to show up with the lobster and you don't, you should be hung.
Absolutely.
But he also, but the thing is, local fishermen said he never ordered the crayfish ahead of time. So that's mysterious, right? Part of me thinks it could have been impulse. Who knows? He could have showed up and done it. And then everybody also says their points towards the suicide is because on King Island, the people that he was supposed to pick up were not there waiting for him, right, to go on the plane. But I think that the human element factor here is because Fred Valentich was it necessarily the pilot you want to be with?
Yeah. Right?
Like, he's not the guy.
He makes Harrison Ford look competent.
Yeah, I think that they just decided maybe if they were going to meet him, be like, let's just see if he shows up and then he'll call us.
Yeah.
Or like, we don't need to go there. Like, maybe we'll just kind of see it. And they do the thing where, like, it's always fun to make a plan, but it's not really fun to complete the plan. All everyone has to do is just all flake at the same time.
So this is 1978, correct?
Yeah, maybe people were less flaky in 1978.
Has Buddy Holly died yet? Has Leonard Skinner died?
20 years before. Yeah, yeah, 24 okay. years before, 23.
Aaliyah has not died yet, though.
No.
But people do know.
If there's such a thing as time.
Well, exactly. So people do know, like, flying single-engine planes with someone who is not competent can lead to death. Like, people are aware, like, Patsy Cline is dead. Like,
oh, yeah.
People know what's kind of up,
Kobe
right?
Kobe tried to make that helicopter pilot have the Mamba mentality against his will and fly in the middle of a storm.
The helicopter didn't have the Mamba mentality, and that was the problem.
Yes.
However, even though the flap and the lights and the stars seemed to wrap up the entire disappearance into a neat little package, there were people on the ground who tell tales that scooch the story back to the other direction. A UFO group out of Phoenix called the Ground Saucer Watch said that they are in possession of a photo from the day of Valentich's disappearance that was taken by a plumber named Roy Manifold during his vacation to Australia.
Now, is the Ground Saucer Watch, is it funny to think about that? Because is it because they are... they are so heavy, they have to remain groundbound.
I did think...
Or is it funny that they just don't want to go up in the sky, which is where the UFOs are, right?
I did envision them looking like the round folks from Alice in Wonderland.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ones
with the little heads. Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
Yeah.
Yeah, but with binoculars.
Yeah.
Live from your grave.
Hey, what's up, everyone? How you doing? Ben Kissel here with Henry Zebrowski.
Yeah, it's me, man.
Yeah, bro. Henry Zebrowski is smoking some of that sweet Last Podcast on the Left, babe. So go out there and purchase yourself some. I hope you enjoy it. We have sativa, we have indica, and we have a hybrid. And I have to tell you, from my personal experience, they are wonderful.
Super tasty live resin. You really get the delicious, weedy taste, which is what I like. And three different experiences. You go to your local vape store and get it.
Absolutely. Thank you all so much for supporting the show. We absolutely love you. Can't wait to see you on the road and get that vape, put it in your brain, and have a good time.
And if you want us at your favorite weed store, give them a call and ask for them by name.
Absolutely.
Last Podcast on the Left, it's weed.
Hail yourselves, everyone.
Hail Satan.
Boy, Texas Pete is a sauce that allows you to sauce like you mean it. It's what people gather around, it's generosity in its simplest form, and it's a swagger people have who know what's good. Each Texas Pete hot sauce is packed with bold, balanced flavor. This signature tanginess is what makes it a legendary hot sauce that can be used on just about anything. It's been at the center of dinner tables since 1929 and is still heating things up today. You're definitely going to want to try every flavor. The original hot sauce has a famous secret blend of fermented peppers. The hotter hot sauce is three times hotter than the original, and not for the faint of heart. Sabor by Texas Pete adds authentic Mexican flavor, and their dust dry seasoning matches the flavor of the original hot sauce and a flavorful dry rub. Tell you what, the other day I was having myself a good old refried bean burrito, and I wanted a little bit of kick to my morning, so I got myself some Texas Pete sriracha sauce, and I smothered those refried beans and that cheese and them eggs in a whole bunch of and it started off my day correct. Texas Pete, sauce like you mean it. Visit TexasPete.com and use the store locator to find Texas Pete products as well as purchase sauces and get recipe inspiration. And use the promo code PODCAST24 for 20% off at TexasPete.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Finding work-life balance can be tough, but Squarespace gives you the tools to reach your goals and have time to celebrate. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. With the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint,
You can select from curated layout and styling options to create a personalized website optimized for every device. Get your website discovered fast with integrated, optimized SEO tools. Plus, make checkout easy for customers with easy-to-use payment tools. And with Squarespace AI, you can explain what your site is about, choose your tone, enter what you need, and get auto-generated text. And that helps you save time. I know I'm sitting on about 2 literal wheelbarrows filled with horse pics. Now, part of the issue has been is a lot of these pictures are getting stopped at customs because some of them do depict various world leaders in horse-like circumstances that seems to be pinging a lot of these custom agents' accounts. Now, so what I've done to do is like, so while I'm trying to work on hand smuggling these horse pics over various country borders, I then also have time, because Squarespace is doing all the other ad work for me, to go and work on my killdozer at home. So thank you, Squarespace, for allowing me to diversify in the best way possible for this country. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial when you're ready to launch. Go to squarespace.com/left to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Hey! Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. That's one of my favorite things about it. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. Now, personally, I'm in the middle of re-landscaping my yard. I like to do it myself because I called up a landscaper to see how much it cost, and it was absolutely insane. Plus, I love dirt. I love getting my hands in the dirt, and I love planting things myself. And Fast Growing Trees has given me some wonderful plants that I can use. Like, I got this Texas sage, it's purple. I've dug up a whole bunch of horrible bushes and shrubs up in front of my window and in front of my house and put some purple Texas sage up there, and it's going to thrive, and it's going to look real good. And I didn't even have to go to a nursery to buy it. It came to my house. Now, this spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code LEFT at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code LEFT at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code LEFT. Offers valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply.
Now, while the photo that was taken by Roy Manifold during his vacation in Australia, while it isn't necessarily what you call breathtaking, it could be perceived to be a fast-moving object exiting the water near the Cape Otway Lighthouse, very close to where Fred Valentich disappeared.
And the Tasmanian waters have a lot of examples of USOs. USOs are a big part of this entire story within the Bass Strait. The Bass Strait.
USO triangle. Being unidentified submersible object.
And if the audience doesn't fucking get it now, if they can't keep up with the acronyms now, then they've learned nothing. They followed nothing.
Well, let's not forget the USO comedy tours. You can go perform for the troops. So perhaps they were thinking.
They're never thinking of that. The audience is never thinking of the USO show unless they're currently in the military. And then we want to say thank you for your service.
Absolutely. Your service. And we would love to do a USO tour, especially if we were ever, if you're stationed in Hawaii, we'll perform
love
for you.
To go.
If
love
you are stationed in Berlin, we will go hang out with you.
Love to go. We have this absolutely. Great our new show. It's all called How Project Monarch Can Help You. And I'm really excited to take it to the troops.
Absolutely.
According to Ground Saucer Watch, the so-called plumber's photo showed a bona fide unknown flying object of moderate dimensions, apparently surrounded by a cloud-like vapor/exhaust residue. The picture, however, is quite blurry and is by no means definitive.
It's a picture.
Yeah, certainly is a picture. But it's one of those things where, you know, if you get one wiggity thing, whatever. If you get 20 wiggity things, then you might have something there.
Right.
And this was not the only ground sighting around the time of the Valentich disappearance. A bank manager named Colin Morgan and his wife said they saw a glowing object hovering in the sky for nearly an hour near the town of Geelong. 35 miles southwest of Melbourne. And I did look it up. It's spelled, it looks like it's called Geelong. I think it's Geelong. I looked it up to make sure I wouldn't get any shit, and I think I said it wrong anyway.
Oh, you did your best.
It's okay. That's all we can do.
Well, Mr. Morgan said that the craft seemed to be cruising above them as they drove down the highway. It was bright and had green flickering lights at one end. Much like the light Valentich reported. And 20 other people reported green lights in the sky on the night of Fred's disappearance.
Damn.
Now, these reports were deemed unreliable by some because they were made after Valentich's disappearance had been reported. And it was assumed that all of these people were just trying to make themselves a part of the story.
Yes, there was a big UFO flap after it was announced that he was gone. And a lot of people reported and called in saying that they were seeing objects in the sky. And then you don't really know whether or not is it inspired by the story.
Right.
Or is it more people looking at the sky? Like, I think that's what it is, too. And then half the time, if you look at the sky, you don't know kind of the various objects, so you can't really identify them. And so there's probably going to be a glut of UFO visions and sightings after something like this.
Okay.
And yeah, that very well may be true for some of the witnesses, that they just wanted to be a part of the story. But
wouldn't that also play into the whole idea of the psychic, you know, the collective unconscious, just because this, maybe the fact that this person saw it brings it to light, and now all of a sudden people are seeing it, but before you can see it, you have to believe that you can see it.
But it's also that phenomenon when you find out something for the first time, then you see it everywhere. It's not Bader Meinhof.
It's when you meet Bob, the friend that your wife has been seeing, but then you realize, like, oh my God, they're having sex with each other.
Oh,
it's like that moment. It's like, I see.
It's the cuck threshold.
Yes, the cuck threshold, yes.
Yeah. Or when you buy a car and you notice how many other models of that car are out on the road where before you didn't see any. And now you think, like, oh my God, everybody owns a fucking Subaru.
Do you know that the Subaru is Japanese for the not for Pelican, but it is for the Pleiadian star system, which is why it has three stars on it, which is actually the stars that are located to what it's connected to. Maybe you think about what's the real fucking story? What's the real history?
To be honest,
of Subaru,
if aliens do come back or if aliens do come to Earth, I think Ween would be their favorite band. Much like, of course, the one who owns the Subaru loves Ween.
That's right. But the thing is that there was a primary witness who did tell others about his sighting on the night of Fred Valentich's disappearance.
Ooh.
And he told people the next morning, but he decided not to report it publicly after his story was met with disbelief and ridicule.
Aww.
The night of Fred's disappearance, a man who still refuses to use his own name.
My name is Dr. Raven.
Dr. Raven. Birth name, Dr. Raven?
See?
So your first name is Doctor.
Yes, and with two Ks.
All right. Very nice.
Well, this witness said that while driving home that night, he and his two nieces saw both the lights of a small aircraft and a very large green light traveling directly above the plane on the night of Valentich's disappearance.
Hmm.
Now, it has always been assumed by authorities that Valentich was over the water when he made his call because that's where he was supposed to be. But remember, Fred wasn't a great pilot.
Right.
And he apparently didn't show up on the radar in Melbourne any more than the alleged UFO did.
Oh, my God.
Now, on the very night that the witness and his nieces saw this amazing sight, he told his wife what they had seen. But what did she do but laugh in his fucking face?
Wow. You gotta believe I know what I saw!
Wow, it's gonna break up another marriage.
UFOs do that.
Absolutely.
You gotta be strong. You gotta be able to handle it.
The next morning at work, this witness told his coworkers. And they also made fun of him and probably called our witness a fucking stangy dongo or some other nonsense Australian insult.
You don't know what you just said.
Stangy dongo.
You don't know what you just said. Yeah. We might be banned in Australia from calling somebody an SD because that's the SD word.
Wow, stangy dongo.
And if I didn't, that proves my fucking point because I made up stangy dongo.
Whoa.
I don't know what I totally made that up. So if I accidentally said some sort of horrible Australian slur, that's on them.
Whoa, this is getting to Noam Chomsky, the actual dialectics conversation.
Yes, indeed. Isn't that interesting, linguistics, how they alter and change between religions and cultures?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Like, what's a sweater and a sweatshirt? What's the difference? Apparently a whole world, if you look on menswear.
Absolutely.
What's interesting about this witness's story, though, is that he couldn't have known about Fred Valentich's experience because none of it was made public until days later.
But even after all the details were released, our witness kept his mouth shut to avoid further ridicule, which probably came anyway from both his wife and his co-workers once the Fred Valentich story came public.
You can just see it going to work. It's already so exhausting. You have to put your khakis on and your finest weird shoes. And then every time you go to the kitchen, maybe get a little coffee.
Yeah.
Someone's cooking fish in the microwave and then you get made fun of.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Like, here goes alien boy. All he does is open up his butthole to the sky. Look at him, hungry for it, looking for a scrape.
This is how you have an office shooting.
But there is, if you,
that's why I'm not going back.
No.
But if you read it, this file, like I did, unfortunately, like if you really go through all of the stuff, there's a lot of pain here because the search for him was incredibly thorough. And his father, Guido, who did have an Italian accent, he showed up day after day after day after day, and they kept giving him whatever material they could because, again, because it was all next to a military base, a lot of this shit had to go under, like, we couldn't talk about it. A lot of this is about, like, there's proprietary information inside of all of these calls that no one could know, and they finally let him hear his son's last words, but he kept the UFO thing going, too, truly out of a, like, while I do believe it is strange, especially his last words. But
and his last words are, it's not an aircraft.
It's not an aircraft.
That's his final, final statement.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And the thing that they, when they try to analyze the final sounds, because it sounds like either, it sounds like engine noise, it sounds like he might be yelling and screaming over it that it's been scrambled by the transmission stuff. But his father kind of kept the UFO storyline, much like he said originally at the top of the episode, out of pure just grief and hope that one day he would be found.
And it gives his death some purpose, I suppose, also.
It also actually, it just hit me that his last words were, it's not an aircraft, because it could very well be him saying, it's not an aircraft, it's my instrument light. Oh, God, I'm going to die. I'm dying.
Yeah, it might be. But if you listen to it, it's fucking freaky as hell.
That is a good point. But he was at least aware. He wasn't like, it's a pineapple. Like, he knew
that it was something weird.
Something very weird.
Mm-hmm. Well, the witness that I was just talking about, he happened to discuss his sightings with a local policeman who passed the info to Guido Valentich. And Guido told an ufologist who interviewed the witness and made the sighting public in a paper that hardly anyone read.
Yes.
Now, naturally, there's also a bit of conspiracy to this story, in the true sense of conspiracy, in that multiple people work in conjunction with each other to either break the law or, in this case, conceal a secret.
This is about the crayfish. Again, it comes back to the crayfish.
It's said that there was actually more to Valentich's final transmission than was released to the public, but key elements were deleted in the public version by powers unknown.
Intrigue Big Lobster.
In the final transcript, there's a supposed break in transmission just before Valentich gave his final words. Final words, of course, it is hovering and it is not an aircraft. The claim is that there was a more vivid description of the aircraft before this, but an anonymous source at the Department of Transport said that that description was cut.
But don't worry, if you go through the file, you can actually see the description that they just made up inside of the UFO magazine that this article is citing, where it's like they basically say in this whole thing, they make up a whole description that he made. We don't know if he did, because also what we also now know about the release of people seeing these types of crafts is that this shit happens fast. Like they linger for a second, but you really don't have a long time to describe, especially if you also are quickly plummeting into the Bass Strait as you're describing it.
Right.
Yeah. And interestingly, this really could be a sign that maybe it was a military aircraft after all, and the description was cut because the craft was a part of a top secret project. Now, the going theories by ufologists is that either Valentich's aircraft was destroyed by a UFO, or both he and the plane were scooped up and abducted, or Valentich was taken alone and the engine cowl flap was found and there were 17 seconds of transmission after Fred's last words because he was scooped up and the plane was left to crash into the sea.
There's an article from the Herald Sun in Melbourne that says, don't worry, out there. Yes, this is from 2014. But there's a farmer who said that he might have seen the airplane that Valentich was flying connected to a UFO.
Whoa.
While it was leaking fuel.
Oh, my goodness.
And yes, he has not said his name, and they can't find the farmer because he said it one time in passing to somebody else. But he did see it and said it. And you know farmers don't lie except about how much they're farming, what they're producing, and what they're farming, because they have to lie to the government to get certain subsidies.
Absolutely, as they should. Of course, Monsanto, we can go into it. This is Neil Young.
I love
Young
that Italian, man.
Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. But you can always trust a farmer. I think that that's a great point. But that's another eyewitness sighting. And that's interesting. That comes from 2014. This story is still alive.
Yep.
But while it is most likely that Fred Valentich just crashed into the sea, it is nonetheless compelling that his description of the UFO, along with the descriptions of those on the ground, match what we see in real UFO footage today.
You know what I could see from the perspective of the lobsters? You can just see them clapping when the plane crashes.
They're like, another one dead.
We live another day, lobster man.
I really do think it's very compelling, only because of his description. Because, like, again, if we didn't have what we have, like in terms of the soft disclosure movement, I really would think that this story would kind of slide into the past and no one give a shit. But now that we really do have footage of what people are seeing and the reports are coming out more and more and more, like my theory is that he saw something, he freaked out, and he crashed. And that it just blew his mind and he lost control over the plane because he was not good at it.
Yeah. I think that's probably a pretty good theory.
Yep, it's just the idea of crashing in a plane. It doesn't sound very fun, but to be honest, he died doing what he loved, which seems to be flying horribly. He should not have been up there.
Fly a plane like no one's watching.
That's it. And that's what he did.
Really let it loose.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, and if a guy is going to do that, if he is just going to fly horribly, Australia really is the place to do it. Because if you do crash, chances are you aren't going to hit shit.
When we went from Perth to Sydney, it's all ocean.
Yeah.
That's like, I mean, I get it, man. You die in there. You dive in there. You're gone forever.
Oh, yeah, man. Those welcoming waters. It seems so nice out there, pristine blue waters, imagining what your corpse is like down amongst the fishes. It's kind of fun.
How long do bones stay in the water?
Marcus?
Like
they disintegrate pretty fast. I don't know exactly how long, but there's a reason why, like, the Titanic isn't full of skeletons when they found it. Like, they were
fucking metal would that shit be, though? Yeah. They did find that little necklace, though, didn't they? That was very nice.
That was fake.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
All right, everyone. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode on Frederick Valentich.
Yes.
He is a man who gave his life.
For what?
Now that I think about it, I am thinking about it more. I think the skeletons down below in the Titanic, I think those disintegrated quickly because of the water pressure, because it is so much stronger underwater. Oh. I think the deeper you go into the sea, the faster a skeleton will disintegrate and be crushed by water pressure. But I think probably under a lake, I mean, they found skeletons that are decades upon decades old. I think it really does depend on how deep the water is, how long a skeleton will last.
I just wanted to make sure
we were all on the same page there.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Because that would be the peace to be amongst those skeletons.
Yeah.
Must be so nice to feel, much like the peace of seeing Last Podcast on the Left live. We're going
like
to be in Jacksonville, the best city in Florida. I don't care what anybody says.
Jacksonville Jaguars.
What an incredible city. We're going to be in Hotland on my old stomping grounds. Okay, we're going to be in Memphis. This is all in 2 weeks from now. Come and see our fucking bullshit. We got Last Comic Book on the Left. Check it out. Pre-order it on Z2. We're now cooking. I'm writing a little thing for it. The Detective Popcorn it makes an appearance. He's funny as hell, and I'm very, very excited.
Buttery goodness.
We've got Soul Plumber number 6 is hitting the shelves very, very soon. I can't believe that our adventure with DC is over for now.
Yeah, it actually comes out this Tuesday, March 15th, because remember, DC books come out on Tuesday for some fucking reason.
So
while everything else comes out on Wednesday.
We will see you next Tuesday.
At the comic book store.
You know what that stands
for? Absolutely. Well, I do.
It's for cunt.
I do know that. And as I always say, I don't say that word, but although very often, sometimes I will call certain politicians that on Able Against Top Hat. Check out that show. And of course, you know,
cunt watch.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's basically American politics at this point. CNN is just going to have that kind of watch there very soon. Someone who's very mean with a lisp, but see you next Thursday, a cunt. That's one of my favorite jokes there.
Save it for the stage.
I save it for the stage. That's kind of a go-to. That's a classic Kissel. And yes, thanks for supporting all the shows here on the Last Podcast Network. And thanks for everyone who calls in to Open Lines every Monday at 4 p.m. PST, 7 p.m. EST. That show has been so much fun. It's been so great to hear from you all. And
Marcus's butthole is doing great.
Marcus's colonoscopy went fantastic, although he did say, despite all the pooping, a little turd was left behind.
There was still some in there, and I would say that the notes from my doctor in the test results were a little passive-aggressive, trying to say that I didn't take enough fucking Miralax, that I didn't take my fucking Dulcolax, that I didn't fucking shit my brains out for 2 days.
Another botched American pullout. That's what this is all about.
Another botched American pullout.
This is about Afghanistan.
But that also just shows you.
I did my goddamn best. I did. I drank all the shit. I took the fucking. I did it all when I fucking had to, and still, even after I came out from under anesthesia, the first thing she told me was that there was still some feces in the colon.
Like,
I don't know. I did the best I could.
That sounds like a real Grandpa Joe over there.
Absolutely.
Screaming. All right, look here. Let me be clear. I did the best I could.
Well, maybe they could try to turn the shit into gold. What do you call that when people do that?
Alchemy.
It's lead into gold, not shit into gold.
No, I'm just saying, if you can turn lead into gold, you can turn shit into gold.
We're not here to discuss alchemy. We're here to wrap up the show.
Oh, we're going to not start a whole new episode?
One material is organic. The other material is inorganic.
Yeah, and
but it's also it's an allegory about your soul. It's an allegory about changing the. Yeah. It's transmuting yourself. It's about receiving. It's about becoming one.
Good thing they didn't find a bunch of lead in your colon. That would have been bad. All right, everyone. Well, thank you so much for listening.
I'd be dead.
Yeah, fucked up.
Hail yourselves, everyone.
Hail Satan.
Hail Gene.
Magustalations, everyone.
Hail me, man. Yeah. My butthole's still Teflon, man.
Your butthole's doing great, Marcus's butthole is clean as
I didn't know wiper this morning.
New.
It was incredible.
Absolutely fantastic.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It says here I have to talk about something I need to get off my chest, and I guess I can share it here. I eat mayonnaise for fun. It's a hobby of mine, and it's an addiction. And it's a daily weight on my life, how much I need whipped egg whites and oil crammed into my veins. As soon as I wake up, and a lot of people carry around a lot of different stressors, big and small. Some people are presidents. Some people are soldiers. Some people have to eat mayonnaise, especially with hard-boiled eggs, which is what I eat for lunch. But I guess I should share that in therapy. Because therapy is a safe place to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And what I do is I just add eggs if I have mayonnaise left over. I just continue to add the eggs. But if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. I hope they can help me. My God. I hope they can help me. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/lastpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/lastpod.